Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and I've brought you another Om blessing. I don't know how to call it. My guest tonight is Skip Miller, and Skip radiates, brings through Amma Bhagavan's amazing high frequency energy and is awakened. And we want to pick his brains and find out what it's like to be awakened and maybe feel some of that energy. Welcome to the show, Skip.
Hey, Veronica, thank you for having me. I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad we met you in Bellingham, although you hail from Florida, so we're kind of kitty-cornered across the planet right now. Not quite the planet. So you're awakened. What does that mean to you?
Awakened. What does it mean to me? It means it's just the beginning of getting started, like you might see on your spiritual path.
Good,
It
okay.
doesn't mean that you're in the highest state of wonderful consciousness, that you're living in bliss all the time. It just means you're just getting started, really.
Oh, really? How many years have you been working with the Om Blessing, the
Well,
Oneness University?
the Oneness Meditators had only been doing it for a year and a half, and I was one of the first four that were chosen in the United States to do it. So
Oh, you were
I've
the
been
first
doing it
four.
since then.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So that's. For that's how long I've been doing this. I started in Oneness in 2007,
Okay.
and then before that, I lived in a spiritual community for 30 years.
Oh, you did? What kind of a community?
It was actually a Christian community. It was the teacher was a Catholic mystic. She was a healer, an awakened, God-realized woman. Her in Oneness we'd call it bhakti, but in the West, we would call it like a devotion. Her love for God was just huge. And so I saw many miracles. I lived in her home, actually, with her husband and her daughter and her secretary. And I was actually her helper for just many years.
Oh, well, that's what a privilege, what an honor to be close to the divinity that way. And has she made her
Me too.
transition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She died in 2001.
And what was her name? Can you share that?
Oh, you know, no, I can't actually. She always wanted to be anonymous, and she actually her secretary wanted to write a book, and she told her not. She said, "I don't want any books. I don't want anything." So I think I'll just keep her anonymous. And privately, I would say it, but over the internet, I don't say it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm impressed by somebody who would keep it anonymous because, I'm a seer, I'm an intuitive, and I can see her light is huge. So
Well,
that's a pretty wonderful gift that she put
yeah.
in the planet.
Well, she used to take us through karma sessions. She used to teach us, as far as being together, how when the issues are coming up with everybody back then, how to stick with it. She would point out all of our issues. She knew all of our thoughts. And so when I first met her, I was 18,
Oh,
and
wow.
being an 18-year-old boy and having some woman knowing all your thoughts is very uncomfortable at first.
But
Yeah, it was.
she cherished the human process, didn't she?
Exactly. There was no judgment. So, and I actually learned that. So, getting into oneness and just seeing and watching what is there, I was really, really, really fortunate that oneness actually was quite, compared to what she took us through, it actually seemed quite easy.
Oh, and so did you start off in oneness by going over to India to the Oneness University?
Yeah, I actually, I had a friend that actually asked me to get her some spiritual books, and that's what got me started. So I went to the store and bought her a spiritual book, and it was written by Carol Windwrider, the Diksha Fire from Heaven. And
Oh.
I did not want the book. I had no idea what Diksha was or anything like that. And so I bought two books and sent one to her. She lived in Montana, and I lived down here in Florida. Sent it to her. She read it. She told me how wonderful it was. She wanted to go to Mount Shasta to see Carol Windwrider. And I said, "Okay, I'll read the book." So I read the book, and I called her back and I said, "I'm going to go to India. I don't
Wow.
care to go to Mount Shasta. I'm going to go to the source."
Good. So was that
And
really mind blowing? Is that really like how do you compare it to
well,
30 years in a very enlightened person's
yeah.
existence? It was really different.
Yeah. Energetic, and I just being in her presence all the time, the energy and watching the healings that happened. I witnessed many healings. They witnessed many beautiful, what you might say, we would have the fragrance of roses in our house quite a bit, the fragrance of cigars in our house quite a bit, and the roses was the Blessed Mother, and the cigars was Padre Pio.
Wow.
And they would their energy would show up at our house.
Wow.
Often, yeah. So it was, I experienced much of that kind of stuff. And when I first decided to go to India, Bhagwan's consciousness came to my house.
Okay, your phone's conking out, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll move.
Okay.
He actually gave me my first blessing. His hands went through the wall. I was laying in bed.
Mm-hmm.
His hands went through my wall and put his and went onto my head and gave me this blessing.
Wow.
And it actually scared me because I wasn't sure what it was. And then he went and stood over by my desk in my bedroom. And this is in the middle of the night.
Wow.
It's almost like an apparition in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And gave me my first blessing, and I was right then I knew I could give the blessing. It felt like I had been initiated right there on the spot, but I hadn't gone to India, so it was 3 months until I went to India after that, and my body was just exploding with his energy. And it was huge to become a blessing giver because this energy just wanted to go through and needed to go through, and so it was, in some ways it was like a beautiful expression that just came through after I became a blessing here.
That's
but being
wonderful.
In India, mm-hmm. yeah. Being in India, still now, I have never experienced the energy. Even with the teacher I was with, I had never experienced the energy in this country like I experienced there, or the shifts that happens in the consciousness of this body. It doesn't come close to anything I've ever experienced here. And I've experienced many beautiful things, but not like there.
Wow. And so how many times have you been?
I've been there 10 times, and I'm actually leaving Saturday to go there for another month. So it'll be my 11th time.
So every time you go is incrementally huge?
Yep.
Wow.
And every time you go, every event I go to, I know something is going to change and shift inside this consciousness, and it always does. And you can actually literally feel the changing happening, the tightness that happens in your head. You actually feel the energy doing something. And I usually don't know what it is until I get home, or have an idea what it is until I get home. And actually, I never really know what happened. I just feel that there's been a shift or a change in how I experience things, how I experience people, how I experience conflict. It's always changing and becoming different.
And how do you experience? I mean, this is something that we all need to learn: is how do we handle conflict? So, how do you experience conflict with all of this?
Well, you know, you don't fight it.
Hmm.
You let it be there. You see, everybody wants to be the saint, and they figure awakened people are going to be like saints, and that's not even close to being true. An awakened person is just going to be who they are. They're going to, what's inside them is going to be on their face. If they're happy inside, they're going to smile. If they're not happy inside or angry inside, it's going to be on their face. There's no effort to be something that you're not.
Because very often in the spiritual world, people get judged for having sad feelings or whatever, don't they?
Well, but how can you help it?
Mm-hmm. I know.
You have there's this massive collective consciousness. Every human being has this thought process that has this anger and fear and worry, whatever it is, that goes through everybody. Everybody on the planet is empathic. They don't always know it, but they're affected by not just the planets, but by each person's thoughts. So you can be awakened, but you're still going to feel all that stuff. It's not going to disappear. And people's expectations that you become awakened and all that's gone. No, you become awakened and you actually experience it and see it even more clearly. And you experience it in a way that might even be more painful.
Because you feel it and don't block it, is that it?
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I see people become awakened and they're suffering. I actually sometimes see them suffer more than people that aren't awakened, because they think the perception, everything that they've read, that they're going to be in this blissful state all the time, and they're not. And so, but they think that's what's going to happen, but they still have the same, what would you might say, the same issues, the same programming, the same beliefs that they got from their parents, from school, from religion, from from what happened at birth. There's so many things. That,
I mean, it doesn't wash your beliefs or it doesn't neutralize any?
No. You see, what happens is you've got these beliefs that are there. In time, that's what happens. But at first, you still have all this stuff that's there. The brain is still seeing the way it sees. What's happened when you see that, the misconception of awakening is that they awaken and they think they're going to awaken with the Christ consciousness.
Right.
Even the Christ had to go out into the desert for 40 days and adjust to the energy and the process that was actually going on in his brain.
That's right. And he struggled with the devil, he called it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the devil wasn't the devil. It was his own thoughts.
Right.
It was being connected to the thoughts of every human. And he actually had to come back and look at that man. He had, his genetics were beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that actually takes into account us too. We come in here genetically with the past of everybody in our lineage that has karma that is actually in some ways similar in each family, but it's karma that's so far and so deep that this body has it. Not just the genetic part of it, the karmic part of it, too. So you've got what's going on the planet now. You've got what's happened on the planet for centuries, for hundreds of thousands of years. And you have to deal with that. But
what you're saying is you don't deal with it. You stay still and you don't wrangle it, right?
Okay.
Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
You see, Bhagwan says just see. He doesn't say change what's there. He said just see what's there. And you have people, all of us, we learn these different practices. We do these breathing exercises. We'll do yoga exercises. We'll do everything to help us be comfortable. But it actually takes us away from experiencing what we see, but we dislike what we see. So it takes us away from that.
That's interesting.
So for me, yeah, the most difficult, and I tell people this at our get-togethers, And I actually have them do it. The most difficult practice you can do is to do nothing. When you sit there and you feel your body getting hot, you feel your blood starting to want to boil, or you feel this fear that overwhelms you, you can't sit still, you just wish the body would almost disappear because you can hardly withstand what's there. What if you just sit there? See what's there, experience what's there, and all of a sudden it starts to disappear. But you have to sit with it. You have to let it be there. Most difficult. That's what awakened people need to do. And the awakened people, see, the nice thing about awakening is the nice thing and the hard thing. You see what's there more clearly than most people see.
So you're awakened to what's there. Is that it?
Exactly. But it's the beginning. Now you see that, you know, you've got a lot of baggage that isn't very pretty, and how you see it is the way the mind thinks, it's you want it all to be pretty, and it's not. So you suffer wanting to be different. And the whole thing, this is the most simple thing. You sit, you see what's there, you see I have this ugliness, and you don't try to change it. You leave it alone. You don't have to.
So what's the personality? Is the personality something that's going to remain the same as we do all of this sort of seeing and becoming awakened to what's going on inside of us? Does our personality release itself, or?
Okay, the personality is going to continue to change.
Oh, okay.
It's going to evolve. It's not going to be the same. But what's happened in the past, the charges that the personality went through are going to be there. So it's experiencing these things that you didn't experience before that created a pain, a hurt, like a cyst, like an energy cyst in your body. It's still there. And so all that's going on is these energy cysts are just burning off as you experience them. But you have to experience the fear, the worry. You don't have to know what caused it. But when the fear comes up, you just let it be. Don't try to change it. Don't go turn the TV on. Don't do some special practice. You can just sit in your chair and meditate. And I know you've experienced it. It can be the hardest thing to do. It can be just totally overwhelming.
So what you're saying is sometimes the reactions that come up like fear or other emotions, I suppose, could have a big gap between where your personality is now and what that is.
I agree. Hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Aren't we complicated? Wow.
Yeah, but no. Mm-hmm. You can say it's complicated, but it's actually the concept and how it is and what to do is, I think, the most simple thing that we can see. We actually as personalities, as intellectuals, think it has to be tougher. Think there's more to it. And the truth of it is the simplicity of it. The simplicity of Bhagavan teaches is so simple, but we don't get it. Hmm. He says, just see. But what we do is we say, we all go, well, I see. We all see. What the hell is he talking about? We see. You see, I see. what do you mean? But the truth of it is, you see from a perspective that comes from your conditioning, your programming, the way you grew up. So that's what you see from. You don't see from almost an objective place that this is what's here and it's okay. You know how the Buddha has, in Buddhism, we talk about the watcher, the seer.
Right.
With awakening, that actually starts to come out.
Hmm.
And so now something comes out that this body, and I think you experience this, there's something with this body is always watching what the body's doing, always watching what the thoughts are doing.
Right.
But it's neither one, right?
Right.
This body can get drunk beyond being a mess, but there's still a part that is not messed up because it's not part of the body. It's just watching what's there.
Hmm.
Well,
I like that.
Part, well, it's true. I've had some experiences that I had a near-death experience that I was outside of this body. There was no fear, there's no worry. Actually, the body was dead. There's no fear, there's no worry, there's no anxiety. I don't have to go back in that body. I don't care if I go back in the body. All the fear and everything is laying on the ground.
Huh.
All the thoughts are laying on the ground. What's in this consciousness that's looking down at that body is nothing but compassion and love for it.
Huh.
So you start to become awakened. You become awakened at different levels. Start to become awakened. Huh?
Hang on a sec. Why did you go back into the body if you didn't care?
I had no choice. It just happened.
Okay.
There was not. You see, that's the thing of it too. This part just sees.
Hmm.
It just watches what's there. It's not like it's making an effort to change or fix things. And I think that's just like almost like a destiny that it just you're meant to. Why I don't know. And it was a gift, I guess. Because it would have been so easy to die there, and you wouldn't have had to go through any of this time.
Mm-hmm.
But the beautiful part is, this is the most beautiful time to live. And if you miss this opportunity, maybe next time it won't be quite so easy, or quite so gifted. So it's a blessing that I came back in.
And so here's something you and I spoke about earlier. People are kind of not annoyed, but there's that consternation about who's awakened, as if there's a separating force here, and who's at a higher level, and there's kind of a hierarchical fear thing that ripples through the people. Do you want to talk a bit about that? How do you feel?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Actually, it's kind of comical, too, actually, in some ways. Why? Let me ask you this. Why does somebody have the issue that and come up with it, that there's a hierarchical thing, and it's this way, and it's that way, and it's no good, and I don't like it?
Because they've been suppressed by it, or they want to have it themselves.
They have a charge about it, because maybe in another lifetime, they actually had issues, and maybe they were the ones in charge. Maybe they were the top ones, and now they have to be. Or the fear of not being the top one, and you want to be. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter what that is. There's actually a charge, an issue inside this consciousness, this body, these thoughts, that dislikes it, doesn't allow what's there. And you see, for me, being with the mystic that I was with so many years, mm-hmm. I learned then, and it stays with me now. When I know somebody is in a state of consciousness that is much higher than mine, that is guided in a way that I can't even fathom, why do I want to question it, for one?
Yeah.
But you can question that, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. At the same time, people don't understand that the different levels of consciousness, it's beautiful to know. Mm-hmm. You become awakened at a certain state of consciousness, and then your belief that the consciousness should be like the Christ consciousness or the Buddha consciousness because you're awakened, but it's not even close to that. Mm-hmm. But it gives you a gift of knowing that the brain actually has changed. And what I notice with people, when the brain has changed, they'll fight and struggle with it, and they don't think it has. Mm-hmm. And I'll see a lot of anger, I'll see a lot of turmoil inside an awakened person at first. Mm-hmm. And the only reason it's there is because of their doubt, their fear, and they don't think that it's happened.
And because we've been striving, right? And striving would assume that there's a top of the hill, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So all this work and effort, and you come out and you go, it's happened to me. They say it's happened to me, but I don't believe it has happened because my belief, my perception says this is how it's supposed to be, and it's not. Mm-hmm. So, but you awaken at a certain state, and that's what I said in the beginning. The awakening is just the start of seeing, the start of coming out of it. So I tell these people, I said, what you need to do is believe, one, this is not a faith thing. Just know that what you've been told is true. And you claim that you've been awakened. Well, even if you have doubts, you claim that it's there. And each time they do that, I see the anger disappear. And I see in a week or two or a month when I come back and see them, that they've had a total transformation because they quit fighting what they've been told. They start to accept that it's true. And then it really starts to manifest. And they actually start to experience what was there instead of fighting what was there or disliking the teaching or disliking how they think it's supposed to be, and they just start to accept it.
Well, I guess it's like not seeing what's there but reacting against what you presuppose should be there, right?
Yep, totally. Wow. Totally. That's when I see people, it's the same. You tell people, okay, don't you, if you resist, it persists. You know, everybody's heard that thing before.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes it goes right past people because they go, okay, I've heard it a million times, and they don't even hear you say that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't even like to say that, but it's really true. So if you fight what's there, if you fight that you're awakened, not believing you're awakened, you're going to have trouble. If you fight not liking that you have fear and think you shouldn't have fear, or your ego says you should be a certain way and you want to be a different way and you want to present yourself to everybody in a higher level of consciousness, and you're not, so the fear that you're going to get a low number, and so you're not going to get the high number, and so
you know, you have to admit it in public.
Well, actually, they don't do that anymore. There's no admitting it in public. You don't have to tell anybody. They give it to you in a piece of paper that's in an envelope.
Oh, okay.
So that's not even true, but
well, you're right. It's fear stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. That's so all it is.
How has your personal life changed? Has it affected how you go into the world? How you, of course, you've been in the spiritual mode for a lot of years now. It's not just since you started with the Amma Bhagavan, right?
Yeah. Well, and see, and it just all that's happened is everything just goes deeper. Mm-hmm. And if there's anger, it's there. I don't try to change it. It's just there. And it doesn't mean that there's not going to be anger there, because there is. Stuff comes up. And it's going to be there because it has to burn itself off. The thing you don't want to do is you don't want to do something that's going to hurt somebody or something that's going to send somebody into a place that they're just going to start suffering themselves. You know, just scream at people or jump on people. Mm-hmm. You just see that, oh, I am angry. Or, oh, yes, I am full of fear. Or, yes, I have jealousy. But it's just, like I said, you have this observer, essentially, and it develops. Continues to develop. Mm-hmm. It just watches and sees it's there, and there's a little bit of a calm that starts to happen in this body as you grow. And as this calm grows inside the body, there's almost like a grounding, stabilizing factor that goes with it. Mm-hmm. So when you walk, there's almost like a grace that you feel inside, an elegance you feel inside of this divine presence that never leaves. Mm-hmm. And it just continues to get deeper and grow deeper. And the consciousness, as you grow, you keep getting these realizations and teachings just because you're experiencing things a little bit differently, and the realizations just come. There's no effort to try to figure things out. It's just shown to you. And then it becomes your truth, your way of life, instead of something you read in a book.
Who shows it to you, Skip? Tricky question.
The consciousness itself.
Okay.
You can call it your divine, whatever it is. And see, now, maybe I was lucky too. My teacher didn't like me reading, didn't like me doing a lot of stuff except just experiencing what was there too.
Uh-huh.
So she discouraged. She would tell me some stuff I could read. Sometimes she actually had me read some stuff just to see if I thought it was authentic or not, or if it was the true presence of the divine or something else. So, but I read very little. And even now I almost don't read at all. And the consciousness, the divine inside each one of us, if you experience it, you don't have to read it.
Okay.
You don't have to explain it, because you actually feel it. It's actually your truth. When it's your truth, you don't need that other stuff. Now, sometimes I have read, and I've got a library in my house. I've got books that I haven't read, but I got books that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some enjoyment that goes with that too. So it doesn't mean that you don't want to stop reading, or you don't want to stop doing things, or stop watching TV. There's still a joy that happens with these things. And so you can enjoy what's there.
But what you're saying is you can tap consciousness without going through the written word or...
Yeah.
Dominion.
Actually, that's what the oneness blessing is for.
Okay.
That's what the Diksha is for, is to tap that consciousness without having to read something, without having to have somebody tell you what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally so you can experience and feel what it is. I did a oneness meditation the other day here in Orlando. And somebody mentioned something about wanting to, there were new people there, and wanting to explain something to the new people. And I just stopped the person and said, I don't care. I'm not going to explain anything to them right now. I just want them to experience what it feels like and just be there. Their minds don't have to know. Once they experience it, we can explain it to them.
That's wonderful.
And so, yeah, it's quite beautiful. Because then, once they start to experience it, one, they understand your words.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually something that they know now. They feel it. But you can explain and explain and explain and explain. But if they're not experiencing it, they're almost like guessing or in the dark trying to understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's totally different.
That's really interesting. I was just thinking about how for the last few years I've been going regularly to Oneness Blessing gatherings here.
Yeah.
And I've noticed people's faces change radically over time. This is not discussion.
Yes.
And it's changed a bit now, but my favorite times are when we used to all gather. Nobody really talked at all. And we would just love each other and left. You know what I mean? It was the most powerful thing. But people changed so much, including me, in that period of time.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
You can probably ask anybody that's gone to India over a number of times. And in India, they have these people called oneness beings,
mm-hmm.
which these people are in high states of consciousness. And you sit with these oneness beings for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. It's almost like the web darshan with Bhagawan.
Mm-hmm.
And during the session, when you sit with them, nothing is said. And there was one time I was sitting there, and I heard teaching that Amoff felt every miracle that you could possibly experience that ever happened.
Hmm.
And I went, how does that happen? And while I'm thinking, that question came through me, how in the world did that happen? I don't get it. These oneness beings were walking in the room. And as they walk in the room, all of a sudden, I went in this state of consciousness that took me into this huge, huge open space. It was like an openness that had no end, no limit, no nothing. And at the same time, it was like this massive computer system that was just conscious in this open system. And I realized at that time, it was just showing to me that all of a sudden, everything that is in this massive system is totally understood, totally known, totally felt by that divine presence, which is her.
Hmm.
All at one time. There was no limit, no space, no box that held the amount of information that it could comprehend and feel.
Hmm.
I get it now.
Wow. It's beyond actually getting it in the mind, isn't it? It's like...
That's right. That's right.
It's a real beingness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really interesting. So what's happening with the whole movement? Do you think... what do you, this is a thought, this is not necessarily your inner beingness, but maybe it is. What's happening with our species and all of this that's going on?
Because
more and more people.
See, the thing of it is, okay, you know that the reason for the Diksha is actually to, it has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose is to actually shift the physical brain back into its natural state of consciousness so you can experience life as it is, right?
Right.
And all that means is that when the body slows down, the mind becomes quiet. Doesn't mean the mind becomes blank or you don't have thoughts or that you don't have an intellect that is like Einstein that still functions and does what it does, because there's nothing wrong with intelligence. It's quite beautiful. It's necessary. It's an awesome thing to have. So you don't want to, you don't want to be blank. You learn so much already. But at the same time, when this brain shifts, the body calms down and slows down just a hair. Understand, it just slows down a little bit inside. And when it slows down, you start to experience life through your senses instead of through your brain.
Right.
So you experience the sight, the smell, the sound, the taste from your heart instead of from your brain. So I tell people, just open your heart. Let your chest expand. Let it open. Like it's almost like it just cracks open and it opens and just welcomes all that's there. And as it opens, it welcomes what's there and you start to experience what you see as an individual sense. Because when the mind is so fast, the body's moving so fast, that all the senses are kind of like just mushed together. I mean, it's not like some sort of vegetable soup that just is experiencing things in a way that is you can't comprehend.
Hmm.
But when you slow down, doesn't mean you walk slow. Doesn't mean you move slow. You can move, you can run, you can play, you can do all kinds of things. But the mind is shifted and it experiences these senses, and all of a sudden, that's where the causeless joy comes from.
Hmm.
Because you experience each one as you experience it. It's a joy. It's almost like a bliss that hits you, another bliss that hits you, another bliss that hits you. Because you just allow what's there to be there, and you feel it from your heart.
Hmm.
Even when I do the oneness meditation, I tell people, I said, as we do this, I see you all looking at me with your brains. Now, we do the best you can as you look at me to experience this from your heart. Experience what it feels like from here and let yourself become open, your heart become open. That's where your divine is anyway. So, as we experience that, we start to shift. It's like a paradigm shift of the planet.
Mm.
At the same time, as we get younger people that become awakened, they become parents. They've had the physical shift in their brain. Genetically, for me, I hope, that what happens with these people, they have children that genetically, they will never shift and lose that childlike spirit like we lost when we were little and became self-conscious.
Hmm.
They will keep it. And then the species will actually evolve. So the consciousness goes inside us. In our physical brain, genetically, the consciousness is going to go into our offspring. And at the same time, it will reverberate out into our ancestors.
I love that. But also, aren't we reverberating out, as you say, the Diksha, when we have a lot of it? When you're doing your own blessings,
yeah.
and you go to a mall, God forbid, but in any way, you probably have to periodically. Don't
yeah.
you actually give Diksha by walking through it?
You're the living, walking Diksha.
Exactly. So
you're a living, walking meditation. It doesn't go away.
Hmm.
I agree. Well, let me explain this. I tell people this sometimes too. Remember the spiritual teacher I had?
Yes.
I used to mess with dowsers and pendulums a long time ago. So I made these dowsers. And so I took the people in the spiritual group into the hallway of the house where I lived. And I would put the dowsers in front of them and test their energy field. And they're all 4, 5, 6 steps away. Their energy stopped opening the dowsers. So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to get the spiritual teacher, this Catholic mystic. I took her in the same hallway. I get 4, 5, 6 steps away. They stay open. I put her at the end of the hall. I go to the end of the living room, which is quite a ways. The dowsers still stay open.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'm taking you outside. We had a very long driveway. I went all the way to the end of the driveway, and the dowsers still stayed open. I walked into the middle of the street, and the dowsers still stayed open,
wow.
and I quit. as we grow in consciousness, that's what our energy does. It goes out, like the Christ when he walked. People were healed just because he walked by them.
Right.
That's the same as us. As our consciousness, we learn that maybe we're awakening to level 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, whatever it is, in this level of consciousness, we start to see it goes up to 20, 30, 40, say, whatever it goes to. That energy field, that I feel it in myself, and I'm sure you feel it, energy field gets bigger. It gets bigger, reaches out further and further and further. So then you walk into this building, and you've touched everybody in the building
mm-hmm.
in a tremendous way, and they got Diksha. They got the one of meditation.
Well, I get excited because I know the number of people that are involved in oneness is growing and growing, and I'm going,
yeah.
A lot of them are in China, right? A lot of them are in small countries and different parts of the world, and I'm going, wow, it must be passing on at a rate that could make a huge difference soon, sooner than waiting for my grandchildren sort of thing.
Yeah, we can't even comprehend, I don't think, but I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shift in itself, isn't it?
Well, and even the oneness meditation that I do, I look in people's eyes, and it's meant to quiet their brain. When the brain is quiet, there can't be any suffering when there's no thinking, no worrying, no fear, right?
Right.
But as I look in one person's eyes, they look back in my eyes and they focus. And I'll say to them, there are two of us here, but now there's just one oneness meditator because we're now connected.
Mm.
I look at the next person next to that person, I say, now there's three oneness meditators. And I go around the room and look at the next person. There's four oneness meditators because our consciousness is actually literally connected. We become still and quiet. And as I go around the whole room just becomes the one oneness meditator.
Hmm.
And what happens when that happens is that they actually realize it, that they've made a connection, and the energy in the room just gets tremendous.
Well, that's where the real coherence comes up. But I notice as you're talking, your energy is going up and up and up. You notice that?
No question.
I'm loving it.
Yeah, no question. It never stops.
Yeah.
Never goes away.
It's just very, very, very precious. What's it like to do Om Blessings? I don't know if the people at home, some of the people listening to us may not know that you can get a list from, I get it from NoniKaufman.com, and she just sends a regular list of when these Om meditators are on your computer, you turn it on and you listen to probably some music, but you get a little meditation and then about 10 minutes of a real blast. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't even play music because sometimes the music will actually set a mood, and I don't really want a mood. I just want the energy.
I like that, actually. I like that idea.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the music will – I mean, I can play music that is really will open the heart. Sometimes I do that just so people have actually experienced their hearts open.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, in some ways I don't do it because it actually is almost like a manipulation in a way. But at the same time, it's also entertaining for people too, and they still get the energy, so there's – you know, both ways are really good.
Well, there's another thing, which you said, calming the brain. Sometimes the music transcends thought, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It just depends on the music. And sometimes, like the one at the Liberation Sutra,
mm-hmm.
the man that sings that is in a very, very high state of consciousness.
Mm.
And what that does is that it actually, you connect with that man's high state of consciousness. It takes you much deeper than you would probably ever go if you didn't listen to the music.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just the whole gamut of types of music you play.
I know. I love the music, but I agree with you that it would be good to have none. I was thinking today about that when I was listening to one this morning.
Yeah.
That or watching one or participating.
Yeah.
But can you explain what happens when you do the Om Blessing? I mean, how do you experience that, Skip?
Well, to tell you the truth, doing the oneness meditation is really easy.
Oh.
And it's,
oh, darn. You come off your pedestal then, don't you?
it is. It's very easy. Something happens with awakening and also with even being initiated as a oneness meditator. There's a part that just knows there's absolutely nothing you're doing. And then if you try to make something happen, it just gets weaker.
Oh, wow.
So for me, and I used to meditate in a back room, and it got to the point to where I would go into these states of consciousness, and I couldn't walk, I could barely talk, I could barely move, I needed somebody to help me. And then it started to shift and started to change. And I started to just come out to the meetings and come out sooner and sooner before it was time for the oneness meditator to come out. For now, I just sit with the people right in the beginning, and I just start looking at them as they come in the room. Hmm. And as they come in the room, as I tell you the truth, as I sit there, the oneness meditation starts. People will be talking all over the room, doing all kinds of things, but there'll be somebody that will look at me. And I'll sit in that chair, and I'll just start looking. And the energy in the room will start to change. Hmm. We did one in Tampa the other night, and that's exactly what happened. It was noisy. Everybody's changing little by little, and all of a sudden the whole room stopped talking, and they were all connected at the same time because the energy was doing what it needed to do even while they were talking and gossiping and being busy.
So when you learn to do it without hiding in the back room and, you know, really transcending, does that mean you've integrated those frequencies better in yourself, or are you just better at managing?
No. What happened is, and I can't totally explain it, but what happened is, you know, when I would sit in the back room, everything would turn off. It's like you have these parts of you that help you walk, help you talk, help you move, help you eat, and there's like these parts of this body that function that stops functioning. It's like turning the computer off.
Okay.
And it just becomes almost like quiet, and there's nothing booted up. So if there's no programs running, then it can't really do anything. And I started to realize that I could still do this oneness meditation with some of these programs running, walking, talking, and I can even drive and come out and do these things.
So you can actually drive a car while you're running that oneness meditation energy.
Well, I use the oneness meditation, I go right out and drive a car.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it's... You see, but there's that consciousness that is always there, that is always watching what's going on, that is always, like, protecting you and taking care of it. And the body actually drives a car very easy. You ever go on automatic pilot when you drive a car?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Everybody does. But you still drive it in focus, and there's absolutely no problem at all?
Well, I'm very excited about what you're doing. It's wonderful. And also... the thing about the Diksha, for people who don't know, very often it's placing an initiated person places hands on your head, and that in turn shifts the frequency in the brain pattern, which gives people a change, either a release or a healing or something, right? It awakens you. Or looking in the eyes is also a way to it's a transmission, right?
It's almost faster.
Is it?
But yeah, really quick.
My question is... with people, for example, I know your older father travels with you. He must be gaining an awful lot by doing that. And we'll talk about that in a second. But I keep thinking of the number of people that are afflicted with, whether it's ADD or Alzheimer's or dementia of various sorts for old people and all of that. And I'm going, can't this really help?
Yeah, of course it does. I was with some Parkinson's people in Iowa here recently. And then Illinois, and they their whole struggle with trying to get healthy, and the whole struggle with trying to be in a better place was actually making them shake more.
Mm.
When they were receiving the oneness meditation, and they were, when they came up and hugged me, their shaking stopped because they stopped fighting what was there. They stopped fighting what was happening to their physical body. And there's an actual comfort that started to happen.
But wouldn't it also release the patterns that are scrambled in the brain stem or whatever it is in the
the
lobes? Or we don't know that, right?
Well, no, it can all happen. I had a man that was in serious shape in one of the places, and I actually, he could still talk. And I asked him questions. I asked him if he was suffering. And it's actually kind of unusual that we did this at this meeting because there's a lot of people there. But he became the focus of the meeting, and everybody's heart went to him.
Hmm.
And you could just feel it. It all went there. And talking to him, he said how he was still suffering, how he had not accepted what was there. And he came to be healed.
Hmm.
But then I talked to him about, you know, you look at the elderly, you look at yourself. What if you're in this physical condition where you can't do what you want to do? And it might just be a karmic thing that... you may not get the healing you want, but if you get the consciousness that will come to you, or these people that are old, they get that consciousness, and maybe they can't physically do things, but they sit in this high level of consciousness. It's like sitting with a oneness being or a highly awakened, evolved soul, that you will be do more tremendous work than anybody else. Like Ramana Maharshi, look what he did. People wanted him to go out and teach. He said, what do I need to teach for? But I need to go out and do anything for it. What I do right here, sitting in this cave, helps heal humanity. Wow. I have to go nowhere.
And I love him. And a lot of us do.
Yeah, me too. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm this is just a little sidebar, but one year we were three of us sang harmony and Christmas carols for a group of people at an Alzheimer's place. And yeah. there was a fellow flat out in his wheelchair. He hadn't spoken for 5 years or something in Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? We just kept singing the same songs over and over because the pianist had dementia, kept playing them. We didn't care.
That's good.
Everybody was happy and we got to practice different harmonies. But anyway, this fellow suddenly starts singing the most beautiful harmony in German. And he hadn't spoken for 5 years. And I kept just thinking,
cool?
it's the feeling, it's the frequency, it is. It's kind of like that. It's not the same, but.
No, but there's, you see, the beautiful thing of it is, for me, when I see blessing givers and I see trainers and I see oneness meditators, and but we're all admitting this energy and we're all giving this blessing to people no matter what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And there is absolutely no limit what this energy can do. And so we just flat out do not know what we can do. And even I talk to people about this prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to them about how the prayer works, how intellectually, you see what happens when you're doing the singing, your heart is open. You're having this joy go out, right?
Mm-hmm. And loving it. We loved what we were doing.
Yeah. And it's coming from your heart.
Yes.
It's not coming from your brain at all.
No.
So when you say a prayer, you sing a song that is essentially a prayer, and this joy is coming out. It's just coming from the heart presence,
right.
And which is this divine presence. That is heard and felt by everyone, and it goes everywhere in the universe. It's experienced by the whole essence of what is. So when you say a prayer intellectually, say, I want this, I'm suffering because of this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, all it is an intellectual practice to try to get something to happen because you don't like what's there.
Right.
But if it comes, it's dead. No matter how much you try or how beautiful you try to make it, it's dead. But if it comes from your heart, that's what your divine hears, that's what the divine hears, that's what the Christ experiences and the Buddha experience. That's what heals, that's what gives grace, that's what gives gifts. It has to come from the heart.
I love that.
It has to. Yeah.
I love that. Well, obviously you're doing a lot of that. Now, I wanted to go back to my question about your father. Is he gaining a lot? He must be gaining a lot coming with you, huh?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I actually just took him to the doctor today.
Oh.
And we just got back just before our call. And the it's going to rain here. I'm standing outside. After I just did a 2.5-month trip across southern USA, up the West Coast, and across Canada, and back down to Florida.
Oh, wow.
And during that trip, he had an episode where I had to put him in the hospital.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And so he goes into the hospital, and we think that, you know, we may not get him back out of the hospital. This could have been a stroke or something like that. And the suffering was tremendous. I get him out of the hospital, and something had happened while he was there. I hope you can still hear me. It's raining really bad out here.
Oh, really? I can hear you. It's a nice warm rain, though, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So what happened is, now he's been walking with a walker for a few years. The last couple of days, he's walking with a cane.
Oh, wow.
His eyes have become clear. His thinking has become more clear.
Wow.
And he's now has a desire to do things instead of just watch TV and eat.
Wow.
He's actually feeling like he's alive again.
Oh, wow. You've reinvigorated him.
The divine has.
The divine. But, I mean, it's it. That exposure. It's the coherency, isn't it, of that wonderful energy.
It's miraculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just don't know what's happening, what's doing it, why it happens, or what's going on. And even the medical doctors, that was a miracle what they did to help him, too,
mm-hmm.
at a couple times.
Isn't that wonderful? So he's kind of got a renewed enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Well,
he's happy to be alive again.
Isn't that great? Have you ever gone to a senior center? It's the sort of thing I think, boy, wouldn't it be great to go into some of these places and lift people?
Could you say that again?
You know, to go into a senior center where people are kind of being warehoused, you know that feeling?
Yeah.
Wouldn't
yes,
it be
I
nice?
Have.
Yeah. You've gone in, done that work?
A little bit. That's a small amount.
I think that would be really precious. I haven't done any of that, but I'm not like you yet. But I will be.
Well, I have a friend. He's a medical doctor.
Okay.
He lives in Texas. I did an event there a couple months ago, and now he's going to India with me on Saturday.
Oh, wonderful!
And I had talked to him about how I had talked to that group. I said, "See about," and because it was actually an older group, I had talked to them about how the consciousness that was given to the elderly, the massive population of the elderly. What it would do for humanity if they shifted in consciousness. And he called me and told me, he said, that was very moving. That's what he wants to do. And he's an MD.
Oh, wonderful.
So we just don't know. It might not be something every one of us will do, but it's something that will happen as a collective.
But you know what I love, Skiff, is thinking that a lot of seniors who think, oh, it's all over now, I'll just be warehoused and that's it. They really could be gathering, sharing so much wisdom. I mean, there are elders, right?
No question.
Yeah, so you're doing the great work.
You're so right.
I think that's very exciting.
The West, that's a little bit of a problem. The elders aren't respected like they are at the East.
How are they in India? How are they there?
Well, just where I experienced, even like in Japan. You watch them, the family is more cohesive, they stick together more, and they actually respect the elder people for who they are and what their experiences were. And we're a young country. When I look at the ancient countries in the East and how they are and how their consciousness is, they look like they're a wise elder person. And I look at the United States as more like an adolescent. A teenager that has a lot of knowledge, a lot of strength, a lot of power, but it doesn't have the depth yet of some of these other countries as a collective. I mean, of course, that's all here, it's all everywhere as far as it being in certain ways, but as a collective, we are a young country.
But you know something that I think is fascinating, and I was writing about this a while back, just for my own sake, but we are going to have the highest number, proportion of older people, unprecedented. And I'm going, there's got to be a really big gift to the collective in that. But we haven't found it yet. We're not. So maybe you're helping that.
Hmm? I totally agree. That is coming.
Well, I'm excited.
So
where are you headed now, Skip? We're going to have to draw this to a close shortly, although I could pick your brains for days. Or change my brain talking to you. That would be the better way to put it.
I've enjoyed visiting with you very much. Now, like I said, I'm going to India on Saturday.
Wonder.
When I come back, then there's I'm actually going to have a surgery on my sinuses because I've had some broken bones in my face in the past, and they just need to be opened up a little bit.
Oh.
But then I go to Los Angeles for Bhagwan's webcast with all of us, and then I'll just start touring again.
Wonderful. Do you love touring?
Yeah. I don't. I do very, very few online ohms.
Okay.
I prefer to do them live, and I do most of them live. I do them online. They're usually live at the same time. I've done a few the other way, but not normally.
But you have such a nice presence when you're there in person. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. I think of the word coherence again. It's so wonderful to be in your presence and some of the other ones
as well. Nice.
It's great.
Of course.
Well, I thank you so much for standing in the rain with your cell phone and awakening us and sharing your awakening with us. And that was Skip Miller, who's on his way to the Oneness Blessing University again. And if you're really lucky, he'll be in your neighborhood to radiate some conscious awakening to all of us. So thank you again, Skip.
So well, I love you, and just so happy to be with you. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to visit with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening. I hope you got that nice, frequency buzz, that little charge of awakening that comes through from these oneness blessings, people, and maybe from one another as we catch the wave. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, tune into my website, veronicaentwistle.com, with your feedback, suggestion for guests. If you'd like to have a session with me and my guides and angels there too, and any other comments you want to make, veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Many blessings to all of us. Good night.